Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the first broadcast of the Water Fuel Museum one-hour talk show. The purpose of this show is to call attention to recent and not-so-recent developments in the field of alternative energy, especially turning water into a combustible fuel. This show is being recorded at 11:30 Eastern Standard Time on February 24th. However, the normal show time will be at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, again on a Saturday evening. With us tonight is a guest that happens to be quite knowledgeable about the field of vortex energy, and his name is Robert Patterson. He lives in Oklahoma, in the United States, the state of Oklahoma. And are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, how do you do, Robert?
How are you this evening?
Yeah, doing just fine, and you?
Well, I'm here. We were without power again today, which is a major driving force to explore alternative energy.
Now, when you say again, why are you out without power today, and when were you without power previously?
Well, previously we had an ice storm. And so we were without power for about 6 days, power and water. And basically we're in a farming area, and, you know, it's old and obsolete. Power lines are running into the area.
So you were without power because of an ice storm, and I think a lot of listeners in the United States will understand what you're talking about, because there have been quite a few power outages over the past several weeks of this winter time. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, and for various reasons, whether it be wind or snow or ice, whatever. We here in Lexington, Kentucky, had such an experience a few years ago where many of the people here in town were without power for about a week due to heavy ice loads on the power lines and tree limbs falling on the lines and so on. And it does strike me as being rather archaic, us living in this highly technological age, and yet we're still dependent on these stinking wires that are capable of falling down when a car drives into a pole or a limb falls on a line. And it actually does cost lives at times. So you're facing that inconvenience, or did face it today.
Yes, and it's extremely annoying, as you mentioned, that, you know, we live in a modern age, and yet we can't even supply residents with power. And this is one of the things that Victor Schauberger was doing, was actually building home power units. And he really did have the key building blocks, because what he was really doing was building an amplification device very similar to modern turbocharging technology that you can find on automobiles. And when you look at that, you realize that there are multiple stages occurring in not only Schauberger's work, but the same multiple stages are occurring within a common turbocharger.
Okay, now a lot of people aren't familiar with who Victor Schauberger was, and I know that a great deal of your research and the products that you're developing date back to his having gotten interested in this vortex-type technology. So can you fill us in on exactly who Victor Schauberger was and why he is so central to this technology?
Well, central because what you actually see is the combining of an explosive force with that of an implosive force, and we're producing a sustainable chain reaction. People are looking for, in the alternative energy community, they're looking for a phenomena known as over unity, meaning that you want to get more energy output than it takes to actually drive the device that's producing the energy.
And so you're saying that a vortex is advantageous because you're sort of coming around the bend and giving yourself a push on the back. Is that the idea?
Well, in this case, it's actually a pull. But you do have the right idea. You're on the right track. It really entails producing a low-pressure sink, and that means that you're creating a zone where a vortex can occur. And generally, you do that by slinging the energy, be it air, water, or the RPM spectrum. You sling this on a centrifugal 360-degree radial plane. And when you sling all the energy away, you've created a low-pressure sink for the vortex to occur. Now, there's a lot more involved, such as axial rotation and various other flows, and it's all fluid dynamic related. However, it's applicable across the board, be it soil, water, air, or the EM spectrum. Nothing changes other than the energy that you're using. You still have to use the same building blocks, or you will never get into over-unity. And the reason why is because you're using the environment as a motor and a fuel, okay? And when you get to that stage, you realize that most of the devices that are built today, the entire alternative energy community is building accumulators. They're not building generators that actually go into over-unity. They can't because they're all on one side of the energy spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, that is the explosive cycle. Now, all of our contemporaries, Schauberger, Tesla, and various others have told us that the environment is an engine, okay? Well, if the environment is an engine, what is the source? What's it running on? What is it? Well, regardless of that, the only available energy to us is exhaust form of energy. So when we go back and we look at the turbocharger, we see that there's multiple stages there. The primary is running from the exhaust cycle. So the primary cycle of the turbo is running from the exhaust energy of the engine. Okay? So let's look at a windmill because that's our best view of this concept. Is the first stage of the turbo is the same stage as your windmill. Your sun is your engine, your air is your exhaust. So now you have the scavenging stage. So you look back at all the alternative devices being produced, and you only have the scavenging stage of the devices. They are accumulators. Tesla's radiant energy device is an accumulator. It's not a generator. Okay? You don't get into generation of energy until you bring the implosive cycle online. So you go back and you look at your turbocharger again, and there's a multi-cyclonic radial and axial implosion occurring on the intake cycle, the implosive side of the turbo. And so you end up with a chain reaction between the explosive force and the implosive force, and the explosive force is driving the implosive force, but at a certain RPM, and everything is going to be RPM or frequency based, because you have to reach a certain level before it will produce energy or the phenomena of over unity.
Okay, so a turbocharger, no one has ever claimed that a turbocharger is over unity.
Well, I'll tell you what, you get behind the wheel and you step on the accelerator, and when that turbocharger kicks in, you tell me, what is it doing?
But in other words, has anyone ever professed that you're getting more out than what went into it, or
it's not relevant. What is relevant is the fact that you're generating energy. You understand? You're causing a chain reaction to occur between the explosive exhaust cycle and that of the implosive intake cycle, and the chain reaction produces more energy than what was available with just the combustion engine.
Right, and so there's the advantage to it.
And major building block.
Well, why don't we back up just a little bit for those who are really in the dark about the basics. Take the word vortex, for example. We've already used it, both of us have, several times. I'm looking at a very basic dictionary for school kids, and it says that a vortex is a whirlpool or something resembling a whirlpool. So basically we're talking about a circular motion in something.
We're talking about a spiral motion, actually.
Okay.
Okay. And so what's happening is it's, you can either coil it or you can uncoil it, and either way you can release energy, the same as you do with fission or fusion. And again, you cannot separate. It's pairs of forces that you have to combine. So if you're building a cold fusion reactor, you only have the implosive cycle where you're combining the energy, and you haven't used your fission process as a complementary, which is your explosive force, to release that energy. You see, our technology, our engineering is at too low a level. We're not combining enough elements together to cause sustainable chain reactions, because we're either stepping on one side of the equation or the other, and we're not combining the two pieces together. Now, let's continue to look at the windmill and the turbocharger again. As I mentioned, the primary side of the turbo is the explosive exhaust cycle driving the chain reaction on the implosive side. You go back and you look at that windmill, and it only has the exhaust energy cycle. The environment is exhaust energy, and we can only accumulate this to either store it in a battery or to drive, say, the windmill. But that's not generating energy. You are not generating energy until you bring the implosive cycle online, just like you have the implosive cycle, multi-cyclonic action. Radial axial phasing is what the term is. In other words, you're causing a super low pressure to occur in such a manner that a vortex can drive and add energy into the system.
So the implication is that if you have a wind coming at you, and you have the old-style farmer's windmill, you could conceivably redesign that to where the force of the wind is now doing a totally different job on a...
Yes, you simply have to take that windmill and realize that, okay, that is the exhaust side of my turbo, and I'm missing the implosive side. And so now with some creative thinking, a little ducting, an additional impeller, you can now cause a centrifugal action that the wind is a wind-powered device, but you can actually cause an implosive reaction to occur, and now you have a chain reaction being driven by the exhaust energy of the environment. You create a chain reaction to occur, and so now you have a vortex with all of its radial and axial phasing to cause a chain reaction within that or across the shaft of that windmill, and now you're generating energy as opposed to scavenging energy.
I see. Now, has anyone done this in a windmill configuration?
Well, yes. Schauberger is the only person that has done it. There are other people that have stepped on Schauberger's work. They've even been awarded grant applications, and they didn't even understand the basic turbocharging concept that Schauberger was put through his devices. But they tried to imitate it and reproduce it, and they ended up building bastardized windmills because they used heat rising as their principle, and heat rising is a loss of energy, not a gain of energy. We're talking superconductive energy from the ambient environment by reversing our trend and making an implosive reactor as opposed to an explosive reactor. Explosion is a loss of energy due to the fact the energy is radiating away. That's not a conservation of energy. Implosive is the only conservation of energy. Why? Because it's implosive, it's spiraling vortex motion. It's drawing more energy into its core from the environment. It's outside to inside versus an explosive reactor, which is inside to outside. You're giving up your energy. You're passing it from the device to the environment. You don't want to do that.
Right.
You want to pass the energy from the environment into your device, not the other way around.
Now, someone else who spoke along this line, although I've not heard the recorded speech in which he uttered these words that sound very similar to yours, is Ewell Brown, the water fuel researcher who has an actual welding gas named after him, Brown's gas.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen reports of his having made some remarks along these lines of implosion being a much more constructive form of or way of generating power for our uses,
right,
as opposed to explosion. And of course, he was talking about the detonation of hydrogen oxygen gas and how it would be much better to work on an implosion cycle rather than an explosion cycle, as all of our internal combustion engines do.
Right, because it represents a loss of energy. For every pound of fuel you burn in that combustion engine, you lose 20 pounds out the exhaust. That's not conservation of energy. You can't not have conservation of energy in an explosive, one-sided chain reaction.
Well, that's another reason why I wanted to have you as a guest on this show, because my contention has been that we don't need to have internal combustion engines at all. I mean, there may be some uses for them, but as far as transportation is concerned,
it could be all electric.
Well, or something more along the lines of a vortex-driven pump-like motor, such as was supposedly perfected by a man named Richard Clem in Dallas, Texas, about 30-some years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
I've looked at it, yes.
Okay. Supposedly, he took a pump that he was using in his work as a highway maintenance worker for the Dallas Highway Department, Road Maintenance Department, and he noticed this particular pump that sprayed asphalt coating or something would continue to run after shutting the engine off that drove the pump. So he noticed that there was some additional energy at work there.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, he either dismantled one of these pumps or bought one, had someone help him. I don't know the details. I don't think anyone really knows all the details, unless there are still some surviving members of his family or something that had taken an interest in this, or someone else, maybe some engineer who helped him or something. But he apparently adapted this vortex, this conical pump that pumped liquid in this, I guess you call it a cyclonic motion or something.
Yes, uh-huh.
And supposedly this motor that weighed about 200 pounds would produce, I believe it was 350 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
And he put it in an older vehicle and was supposedly told by the automaker of that vehicle that the manufacturer told him, their legal department sent him a letter saying that he'd better stop using one of their vehicles in promoting his product, which I found quite interesting. If an inventor does come up with something, they could actually face that by the corporation whose vehicle they're using to demonstrate the technology. So he had to build basically something like a doom buggy or a vehicle that didn't have anybody's name on it in order to drop this motor in it and do a public demonstration of it. There was even a report that he buried one of these motors running in the ground, and that it continued to run for quite some length of time. At any rate, it seems to me that if, in fact, these stories about Richard Clem, which they say he died of a heart attack and under certain circumstances that were somewhat perhaps unnatural, that he had actually been bought out by some type of energy entity, and his work came to naught. But what I would suggest is that if, in fact, he did have a viable product, then electric vehicles are not our only option to internal combustion engine-driven vehicles. That if there is something to this vortex-type circulation of a liquid, in this case, I think he was using vegetable oil. You may correct me if I'm wrong, but supposedly he tried motor oil or transmission fluid or something, and it actually got too hot. I think it runs at something like 400 degrees. And he found that he had to use vegetable oil as the liquid in this motor. But that the circulating of this hot liquid was basically a perpetual motion machine, if you want to call it that, that would produce usable horsepower and keep going.
Well, the vortex technology, as I mentioned, is soil, water, air, and the electromagnetic spectrum. It makes no difference what energy you're working with. You can only accumulate energy from the environment, which is exhaust energy.
Well, would you like to comment on Clem's design, since you are at least a little familiar with it, and explain to any listeners why it is that his technology would work?
I cannot give you an explanation of Clem's technology. I'm not following that technology. Schauberger's stuff is right on the mark. You know, many people, there's a lot of places on the Internet that call every alternative energy specialist. They call us crackpots and quintessence of a loon. And, you know, they say, well, Schauberger's technology was suppressed because he's a crackpot. Let me ask you this. If that's the case, why on earth would the government go out of their way to suppress crackpots?
Yeah.
Okay?
Because there's plenty of them walking around that aren't being suppressed.
That tells you right there that person had a viable energy technology, and he has the fundamental building blocks. There's absolutely, I'm not going to go and I've looked at all the technology that's out there across the board on the Internet that's available, and you can see it, you can read about it, you can see what these people are doing, and for the most part, what they have done is designed an accumulator, nothing more than an accumulator. They do not have an energy-generating system because they have only accumulated exhaust energy, and they have not converted. Let me give it to you this way. If I put up an antenna or a windmill, and I trickle electricity down into a battery, that's the exact same thing as drilling for oil and bringing up crude. You cannot put the crude directly into your vehicle and drive down the road. You have to process it, okay? So if you bring trickle down energy from the windmill or a radiant energy receiver, and you put that in a battery, despite the fact that it is consumable as electrical energy, you haven't processed it because you didn't treat it as a crude form of energy. You treated it as a premium energy, and that's therein lies your mistake. What should have occurred with that energy is you should have put it through a process, a chain reaction, so that you could actually make a generator, so that trickle-down energy drives the generator, and the generator then produces more output than what it took to initialize it. You see the point there?
Mm-hmm.
The engineering level is too low. People are building accumulators only, and they're not building the next evolution of the energy or the technology. They're not building the next evolution, which is to actually build a generator that is being driven by their accumulator.
Now, is this something akin to what Tom Bearden has stated, that the basic theory or electrical theory that this whole world runs on is somewhat deficient in the way they view the usage of energy?
You betcha, because they're all on the scavenging cycle. They're not on the energy-generating cycle. There's two forms of energy, primary, explosive and implosive, push and pull, hot and cold. And if you use one side of this concept only, then you're completely missing the boat. Then you're stuck with the rules that modern science has laid down and said, oh, you can't get over unity. Well, of course not. You're only using explosive energy. That's a loss of energy. You cannot gain energy from an explosion. Once the explosion passes a certain level and you've tapped that energy, it's lost to the environment. So in order to have an over-unity phenomena, a sustainable over-unity phenomena occur, you have to take your explosive or your exhaust energy and convert that into an implosive form of energy so that you're actually causing the environment to drive a vortice, be it electromagnetic, air, water, any way you want to spin it. You have to have a certain process occur, which is centrifugal energy being converted and if you want to look at centrifugal energy on fluid dynamics or electrodynamics, you would look at it as expanding and collapsing a magnetic field. That would be the equivalency of your centrifugal energy. But without a see there's some commonalities that are occurring here from energy technology. Okay.
Are we speaking, for instance, in terms of a standing wave?
Exactly. This is what zero-point energy is. It's a standing wave. If you can't stop the jitter, what do you think the jitter is? That's a standing wave, okay? Now, if you take and you build a waveguide of a particular kind, you can cause a standing wave, which is then passing back and forth through your waveguide. You now have the small replica of the magnetic force that you can use to pass back and forth, alternate, through your coil. If you design your coil correctly, you can then cause a high voltage pulse to occur. So now you have an expanding and collapsing field that you can put into your secondary of your transformer, and now you have a high voltage source that you can either use to convert again into another form of energy, say microwave power and power something, or you could tap it as electrical energy, as premium energy, and convert that for light bulbs, refrigerators, or whatever you wanted to use. But you have to realize that is still a radiant energy receiver, and it is still on the explosive cycle of the energy. So until you change that into the implosive cycle, meaning that you're drawing more energy in from the environment because you're setting up, you're taking the explosive force and you're using an implosive mechanism on the end of it. It's the same principle as setting up a building, and you want the building to implode upon itself. You set a specific explosive charge in a certain manner so that the building implodes as opposed to falling all over the place. Okay? So that same concept occurs in electrical energy. So you cause a high voltage discharge. That's your explosive, and you set that all up so that your explosion then drives an implosive mechanism. Let's say it goes into a microwave reverse wave oscillator, for instance, okay? So now you've taken your explosive electrical force and you're driving an implosive or reverse wave oscillator into the microwave spectrum. So now you're tapping into the environment because you're recoiling the energy. You're taking your explosive force, and instead of losing it, you're running it in reverse through the next stage, and so now you're winding the environment up, and you're able to tap more energy than you would have gotten ordinarily.
Right. In the case of one of your videos, which I think it's good at this point to mention the fact that you have produced how many different videos?
Well, two videos were produced from Tesla Tech when I spoke at those conferences in 2004 and 2005. And I have just produced a video, a third one, which is on my website at gravitic.tripod.com.
Okay, how's that spelled, gravitic?
G-R-A-V-I-T-I-C-S.
And then?
It's .tripod.com. It's actually quantumgravitics.tripod.com.
Okay, and a person could probably find that on a word search if they typed in what?
You can put in gravitics into Google, and it's going to pop up.
Okay, so that would be an easy way for someone who doesn't have means of writing it down to remember. Okay. And so they can order a video that basically summarizes this whole ideology or technology.
Yes, I basically have a chalkboard on the wall, and I basically walk you through the diagrams of Victor Schauberger's his implosive technology, and I give you the explanation of, look, this is a turbocharger. It's just in a different form. The modern day analog to this is a common turbocharger. This is how Schauberger's device is functioning, and this is how the turbocharger is functioning, and at this stage of the implosive cycle is what everybody in the alternative energy community is missing, and they're trying to get over unity, but they can't because they're using an accumulator on the explosive cycle, which is a loss of energy, not a gain. Even though it's an accumulator, if you're using it explosively or if you're tapping your accumulator directly, you've lost the gain because you didn't put your energy into an interest-bearing account. What is an interest-bearing account? In this case, it's an implosive cycle. If I give you $1 million and you run out and you start spending that $1 million, you're going to deplete your source at some point. But if I give you $1 million and you put it in an interest-bearing account and you only use the interest, then you'll never deplete the source. So if you build a windmill and you put energy into a battery and you tap that battery, you're going to deplete your source. But if you take the energy that's in that battery and you're still bringing energy down into the battery, but you don't tap the battery, you take the energy from the battery and you use that to drive a generator. It has to be a certain kind of generator, but it goes into the implosive cycle on the generator. Now you're generating energy as opposed to losing energy. So you're going to have surplus energy. You could even recharge your battery while you're running other things at that point, but you wouldn't have to because you're already trickling energy out of the environment to charge that battery. What you have to do is go to the next level of engineering, which is to actually build a generator versus an accumulator.
Right, and part of the problem in all this is what you just said, and that is that for the average person, I think the average person has less in the way of mechanical skills now than the average person did 40, 50 years ago and so on. There was a time when, in this country, in the United States, when the average man had a set of tools and actually used them. Not to say that everyone was a tinkerer and whatnot, but I'm 47 years old, and I remember when I was a kid, and mind you, this was in San Diego, California, so it wasn't like I was out in Oklahoma or Kansas where everyone's a farmer and everyone had to work on their own equipment. I was in a city, but it seemed that there were many, many more men, adult men, who were more hands-on mechanics than there are today. It seems that we've sort of handed over our ingenuity and our ability to fix things.
We've fallen prey to convenience.
Yeah, and even technology has made it to where we can't work on our stuff anymore.
Yeah, because it's all computerized.
Yeah, everything is designed to be used and thrown away or serviced by an authorized service facility that are really the only ones capable of working on, which they say nobody even fixes anything anymore. They just replace parts.
Exactly. They're parts changers. They're not mechanics.
So getting back to what I was saying, when you said the next level of engineering, that leaves most people behind right there. The
well,
average
not
person.
Really. This isn't that complicated, but you do have to do some creative thinking. You do have to get in and do some research. You have to examine the right path. If you're following the wrong set of building blocks, you're not going to get anywhere. You may end up building an accumulator of some kind and think that you've built some new energy technology when all you've really done is built an accumulator.
Well, right now I would have to applaud anyone who does anything.
Well, true.
That's how pathetic society is as far as people being hands-on and doing things. If somebody turned the TV off and built an accumulator or built anything, I don't care if it was a log cabin made out of popsicle sticks, I would probably congratulate him for at least doing something, you know. But what you're saying is that people need to be more proactive in at least starting.
Yes.
What I'm saying is that we who have been at this now for a while, and I haven't been at it very long at all, really, just a couple of years, but we need to be revealing to the public the simplest forms of devices that could be made.
And we need to be very supportive of our innovative people. We don't need to be calling them crackpots and calling them names because we don't understand what they're talking about.
No, in fact, that's why I wanted you as my first guest, because I think that as far as I know, you're one of the only people in the United States and possibly in the world who is really promoting this kind of thing. I think there are probably others, but I was doing just a little word search here a couple hours ago, and it seemed that it said there's one person in the United States who's behind this kind of vortex thing, and I don't recognize his name, but it said you can't contact him, you know, or he's incommunicado or something. So I think people like yourself who are, you know, blazing a trail, you may not be famous for what you're doing, but if anyone looks up Victor Schauberger and then tries to find out who's pursuing his line of thinking or research, you are one of the players. And when you mentioned support, my experience has been that there is very little or no support for people who are obviously dedicating their time and their resources to furthering mankind's ability to utilize a really good alternative energy technology. All the money seems to be going to the people who least deserve it.
Exactly. It's going to people that are not going to come up with an alternative energy technology. They don't want to. It wouldn't be good for their fossil fuel industry. They believe that if you do come up with a free energy device, that it wouldn't be able to be metered, you know, like we're metered at the power pole. And that's really just not true. That's not true at all. Or they believe that it would be devastating to the economy. That's just not true. Look at all the newfangled things that come out that kick one, you know, kicks one device off the market and a new one takes its place. Was there a market collapse? Well, for that manufacturer, there was, but a new one took its place with a new product. That's simply all that would happen.
Well, they refer to it as a disruptive technology because it disrupts the income streams of someone. In fact, you know what I notice is when they use the word sustainability as they report the news, whenever they say sustainability, they're not talking about sustainability of the planet, of the air we breathe, you know, of the life systems on this planet. They're talking about the sustainability of the income streams of the rich and powerful.
Exactly.
You know? And there are a couple other words that they use that have nothing to do with the good of mankind and this planet. It's all about their economic scheme. And unfortunately, that is the current paradigm. However, the thing that I think is so different is the ability to research information on the Internet and to be able to find people like yourself. It would not necessarily have taken place had the Internet not been a tool that we are currently able to use.
This is truly the age of enlightenment.
Yeah, and who knows how long that's going to continue. There are people who are suggesting that the powers that be aren't happy with this kind of communication and enlightenment, and they're going to take steps to make it more difficult to find information. In fact, they say that it already has happened. And in China, for instance, a person can't do a word search with the same results that we get here, that their ability to search certain keywords on the Internet and get websites and this kind of enlightenment is very limited. So it's possible that is already taking place even here and that it can get worse to the point where when you type in vortex implosion technology, very little will come up on the screen. So your ability to research it will be restricted. At any rate, let's get back to your video because I didn't get all the ordering information and whatnot. So if a person goes to your website, Gravitics, or word searches Gravitics, comes to your website, how much is the video?
I'm marketing it for $35 total.
$35 total, including shipping?
Mm-hmm, everything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds reasonable enough for leading edge.
It's about an hour and 15 minutes long.
Hour and 15 minutes? Mm-hmm. And ordering information can be found on that site. Now, having watched the video, is a person in a position to then build something? Are there plans involved? Or
They could most definitely build something. They're going to have to do some more research, just like I have to do research on a daily basis. And the level that I'm at, the information is very, very scarce. You know, you can't get a PhD to communicate with you on any level. You cannot get the people that are into, for instance, I'm up to the level of microwave engineering, and you simply cannot get people in microwave engineering technology to even communicate with you. The moment you ask them a question, they turn around and say, well, if you've got $10,000, I'd be happy to answer your question, you know. Or they accuse you of attempting to misappropriate power from the local radio and television stations, despite the fact that you're explaining to them that you're tuning to the transition frequency of a photon, light, not radio and television communication.
So there are people who are doing that?
Well, you can do that. You can put up an antenna, and you can put a bridge rectifier across the antenna to ground, and then you can actually charge a capacitor or you can charge a battery. If you use your television antenna and you aim it at the local television transmitter, you are then, you know, and you're on that frequency, you are then scavenging that energy.
Really? So that's something akin to what Tesla had proposed, huh?
This is exactly what Tesla was doing. He was putting an X-ray transmitter onto his and being powered by his Tesla coil, and he was transmitting to his radiant energy receiver, which he then converted to an electrical discharge. From my understanding, even though some of the literature seems to explain Tesla's radiant energy receivers as being or having the ability to receive an ambient energy, I haven't been able to cause one to actually do that without putting a bridge rectifier or something like that into the circuit, because what we find in the environment is AC. And just like the energy in the environment has a jitter, zero-point energy, a standing wave, the sun, all the stars in the universe, in fact, may, in fact, be simultaneously exploding and imploding. They're not just on the fission. They are on the fusion and fission combined. And so what we're seeing is an alternation between the two, and so we're seeing alternating current in the environment. There's absolutely no other explanation for it other than the man-made alternating current that we're pumping in at radio frequencies.
Well, why don't we get back to some of the things that you have actually developed and that are featured in your video, some things that people who are hands-on oriented could actually build themselves and the benefits that they would receive from utilizing these devices.
All right, some of the things I'm working on are fuel-saving devices. So what we're really looking at are some transitional technologies that will transition us from fossil fuels into other forms of energy, specifically implosive reactors. One of the first devices I built was a ram implosion wing, and basically it's using the wingtip vortices that are generated by any wing that flies through the air. You have high-pressure air underneath, low-pressure air on top, and so the high pressure underneath tends to curl over to the low-pressure side, and as the wing is moving through the air, it induces a vortice which causes drag and pulls antagonistically against the aircraft. But
now, what's the difference between a vortice and a vortex? Is it the same thing?
Pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
It just depends on how it's generated.
So now, you're saying that there's a swirling? Is that the idea?
There's a swirling. There's a spiraling.
Of wind, as wind travels on both sides of a wing.
Right. Just like you see a tornado in the environment, you see a tornado off the ends of the wingtip. Okay? This can be looked at as a shape that is generating a vortice. But in this case, let's look at it as a motor again. Remember, I've said the environment is an engine. Okay? And when you're moving this wing through the air and it's producing a vortice, but it's antagonistic. So the definition of a motor is a stator, that is the stationary part, and a rotor. So we look at the wing as the stator and the vortice that is produced by the wingtip as the rotor. So we now have the makings of a motor. The problem is it's out of phase. It's out of phase because it's the suction head of the vortice is pulling backwards antagonistically. It's in the form of drag. Modern aerodynamicists tell us that that drag is a price we have to pay if we want to fly. Well, that's true only to a point. If you correct the geometry, that is, if you change the shape of the aircraft so that the vortice occurs in front of the main wing, you're now drafting on your own displacement. Very similar to when you see race cars, one gets tucked up behind the other. The drag of the leading car is actually a vortice. What's actually occurred is the lead car or any vehicle for that matter, is pushing a wave in front of them, just like you see a wave on the ocean rolling into shore, okay?
Right.
So the vehicle is pushing this wave out in front of it. The faster the vehicle goes, because the air has a viscosity, that means it's sticky and elastic. So the elasticity of the air allows it to bend and wrap around the sides of the vehicle. The faster you go, the more this wave gets bent in half, into two halves, and so you have two rotating vortices, one on either side of the car, and as the car passes through the vortice, the vortice slaps back together, and that, like when you get behind a big rig, you feel that buffeting effect you feel? That's the two counter-rotating vortices that you feel back there that have stretched. It's just like a rubber band, only it's the elasticity of the air, and you've stretched it, created a wave, you've pushed a wave with the front of the vehicle, and then you've stretched it because of the speed that you're going, and so that translates into drag behind you, okay, because the vortice has a suction head, and it's that suction that's pulling backwards on you. But if you move up into the right zone in the right place behind that vehicle, that suction will then pull you forward, okay?
Okay, so what does this do for a vehicle if they put one of these, you called it a ram wing?
A ram implosion wing.
Ram implosion wing. If a person installs this, I suppose you're talking about putting it on the hood or the rear of the vehicle, right?
Well, in all cases, I've put it on the rear of the vehicle because I want to allow the antagonistic energy a long time to build up. See, the environment is huge, and so it's very difficult to accumulate a lot of energy because it's huge, because we're not thinking in terms of turbocharging. In fact, the ram implosion wing is a cross-section of the implosive side of a turbocharger. If you were to take a cross-sectional view of a turbocharger and look at the venturi ducting on the intake side of that turbo, you would see the ram implosion
wing. Really? Okay, so you're taking this thing, you're building it out of what, plastic, fiberglass, something like that?
Yes, in this case, it's a plywood core, foam overlay, hand-shaped, and then you lay a coat of fiberglass cloth and resin on it to solidify it.
Okay, so it looks something like a spoiler, but shaped differently.
Right. It looks kind of like a ram's horn, you know.
Okay. And you're mounting this on your vehicle, and you're putting it on at a certain angle, is that correct?
Yes, a certain height, and in some cases it has to have a certain angle.
And for every vehicle it's different because every vehicle creates a different
drag.
Yeah.
It's drag, but the drag is actually a vortex action. A lot of people tell you, oh, it's just a void behind the car. No, there's no such thing as just a void. There's a mechanical mechanism that's occurring that's causing the drag, and that is rotation of the air into a vortex.
Now, are any aircraft designers, have they used this kind of thing on their aircraft for these purposes?
To some degree, they're beginning to put little winglets, but they're really spoilers. What they're doing is spoiling the vortex effect or delaying it so that they can delay the effects of drag. They're not employing the vortex as a means of thrust. There's explosive thrust and there's implosive thrust. Implosive is suction, and they're not applying the suction. They're trying to avoid the suction. You see, which is the wrong mindset to be using. You already have a rotating. The air is the rotator, and you have a suction head. All you have to do is have it occur at the right place and time, so that it pulls you forward as opposed to pulling you backwards.
Okay, so the effect of this device then is that instead of facing the sheer wind resistance that is normal when a person is traveling down the road, you are now converting some of that wind activity into something positive.
Right. Instead of having an antagonistic suction pulling backwards on the vehicle, you're turning that suction around so that it pulls forward on the vehicle. You're causing it to occur at a different place in time so that it's not pulling backwards, it's pulling forward on you.
So we would say this comes under the heading of something like aerodynamics, or?
It is aerodynamics.
But very advanced.
But it's fluid dynamics, it's aerodynamics. You can't separate them. When you start separating everything, you lose sight of building blocks, okay?
Right.
And so if you separate it and you go too far in your separation, then you're too low on the building block scale. Okay.
Yeah. In other words, you're at a nursery school level instead
of... Exactly. You've got a retarded... what you've done is you're starting from a retarded base of building, and if you'd have kept the fluid and aerodynamics as a whole, then you'd have a greater level of building blocks to build upon.
And you know, when you say fluid, it makes me think of something that's rather comical along this line. As you're talking, I'm thinking back to when I went to a scuba diving show. This has been maybe 10 years ago. And there was a guy, and I don't remember his name, and I don't remember, I think the name of his diver's fin is a force fin. I don't know how into water sports you are, but...
I'm a certified diver.
Oh, you are? So you're probably familiar with what I'm talking about.
Yes, I am.
This guy came out with these fins, and he has these funky little horns sticking out of them and stuff. Yes. They're called force fins, I think. Some of them are. This force fin is pretty
basic. He imitated the little bumps that are on the fins of fish and whales and different things.
Yeah, there you go. And he, you know, I was actually listening to him give a speech here at this dive show about how these fins work, and it's really interesting. But as you were speaking about fluid and aerodynamics and so on, it brought to mind how he was describing that as you kick your legs in underwater, and you have fins that are shaped differently, you can get increased efficiency in your movement.
Right.
Well, let's get to the dollars and cents. So, what does it cost to build this particular device? I know there's several more. We need to get to them because we don't have very much time.
I have some kits available on the internet. Now, we're actually evolving this ram implosion wing to the next level.
Okay.
This particular ram implosion wing that I'm just now discussing is the basic building block. However, there have been more successes than there were failures. There were some people that did not find any mileage, or they only found 3 miles per gallon, and then there were a number of people that found, as a rule, double their mileage. I, in fact, went from 10 miles to the gallon to 27 miles to the gallon.
And this is all mentioned in your video, correct?
Yes, it is. And,
okay.
And now the next evolution of this wing is to put this same type of turbocharging and windmill technology that I've been discussing with you, which is a reactor is what it is, but it routes the air in such a way that it allows a huge vortex to be generated, a very powerful vortex. I actually built a model of this turbo that I'm discussing, and it was just, you know, built out of some plastic salad bowls and a little airplane motor, a little 10,000 RPM motor and a 9-volt battery, and I had it sitting on the floor, and I turned it on, and it's sitting there running, and I didn't think it was doing much of anything. And I'm about 5'4", and so I waved my hand at chest level across the top of this thing, and I could feel a strange field, like a vortice of some type. And I moved my hand down just a little further just to get a good sense of what this, and I realized that it was some type of diamagnetic force. And this thing grabbed my hand and started pummeling it and was about to suck it into this blade, and I literally had to kick the device to keep it from sucking my hand in.
And how many inches away was your hand from the actual...
Oh, I'm 3 feet away at least.
Wow.
From this thing. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, okay, so let me ask you this then. If a person were to build this ram implosion wing, according to the way it previously was being offered or marketed, they would be out how many dollars worth of materials approximately?
Well, if they can buy several kits, they can buy just a set of plans, which is roughly $35 or less. And in that set of plans, they could actually pull out the information and the drawings that are there, and probably would run them, you know, somewhere in the $150 range to buy materials and build a wing.
So for around $200 in their labor,
certainly,
they could buy the plans and build a ram implosion wing.
Yes, they could. Yes.
And they could conceivably, the best case scenario is they could actually double their mileage.
Best case scenario, and in a few occasions we saw at least triple the mileage.
So this is not doing anything under the hood.
No.
This isn't adding air to the tires or
no,
or any other of the fuel-saving tricks that are out there.
This is just realizing that, look, you're in a brute force mechanism that's missing the implosive factor. And so we're reattaching the implosive stage of the energy back onto the explosive stage. The explosive stage drives the implosion. The implosion generates the energy for you, and now you have more efficient vehicle because you've manipulated the airstream so that it can do work for
That's
you.
That's amazing. Now, I do have to say something. You had earlier mentioned that these are transitional technologies.
Yes.
I don't view that right there as a transitional technology, because no matter what you end up using as a future technology, you would still want to install this on your vehicle.
Yes. Probably not this original unit.
No, but something like it.
But yes, but this next generation, where it actually has an implosive turbocharger built into it, and so the wind is your brute force that starts the thing running, and then the generator will drive the motor, and then the motor's going to crank on the...
So you're saying that it goes from a no-moving parts device, the next generation has moving parts.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
But even without moving parts, just having this spoiler-like device on a vehicle, you can double your mileage.
Yes, it has approximately, out of about 40 people, about 12 of those, you know, found nothing, or 3 mpg, and the rest doubled their mileage. And these were on SUVs, pickup trucks, and vans.
That's unbelievable. And see, this would apply to the water fuel technology as well, because a water car is a car, and if it can benefit from any kind of technology to increase the efficiency of the movement down the road, why not?
Mm-hmm.
We only have a few minutes left. How about getting into just briefly some of the other things that you've come up with?
Well, I'm actually working on an anti-gravitational technology. It's photon-powered, converted into electrical, converted into microwave. And the primary stage operates just like a Tesla coil, just like Tesla's radiant energy receiver. It is an antenna-based technology and transformer, which converts it into high voltage, and then there is a microwave engine that runs implosive-wise, so that's the second stage of the reactor. And I've made some discoveries. I've actually traced this technology back into ancient times and actually decoded a 10,000-year-old artifact that has this microwave-powered anti-gravitational technology encoded into it.
Well, I don't doubt that ancient peoples were much more advanced in many ways than we could possibly imagine. And perhaps someday we'll know more about just how intelligent they were. We don't give them nearly enough credit for having come up with some advanced technologies long ago. We just have a couple minutes left. How about the direction that you hope to go with the use of air or liquid?
I hope to be able to produce at least a primary windmill, which will be incorporated into the ram implosion wing, which will make it an extreme implosion wing, which will prove the windmill technology. And once it's proven there, I hope to incorporate this into an electrical vehicle so that we can actually have an implosive reactor that pulls the car forward and charges the battery simultaneously on the fly.
Yeah, well, they're coming out with a very advanced electric vehicle even as we speak, the Tesla Motors. I guess they're coming out with a sports car just within the next few weeks or months. And perhaps some of these technologies can be adapted to some of the electric cars that are coming down the pike, so that they won't need to be plugged in.
Yes, and even my radiant energy receiver is a device that will be applicable to either powering an electric vehicle or at least have the ability to recharge the batteries 24/7.
Well, that's very impressive.
Thank you.
So any words of encouragement to the average person, tinkerer, thinking about getting into some of this kind of...
Yes, just please realize that what you've done is you're on the energy accumulation cycle, or you're on the explosive cycle, that the environment is truly a form of exhaust energy, that it is an engine, and that the only available energy you have is in the form of exhaust energy. And if you'll simply look at the function of a turbocharger, it'll give you the building blocks for driving your devices into the phenomena of overunity, because there's a secondary chain reaction occurring that is missing from modern energy technology.
Okay, well, Robert, I thank you very much for having joined me in this first program, and I hope that many people will at least access it on the archives and benefit from your comments. I think you're a good example of how really all of us should be more hands-on in trying to come up with answers for our own energy needs and to help our neighbors as well. And you've set a very good example for mankind in general in this respect, and I thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Good evening.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Well, join us again next Saturday night.